Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Dealers of Ireland. Our showrooms are open for business with your health and safety our priority. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551, wash your hands, as you know. The main topic so far today is about funerals. We've been contacted about. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Tell us your story, please.
Well, it's not actually a story. It's just a fact. It was a young woman being buried this morning, and she has 4 children.
Yeah.
7, 9, and the 2 twins were 7 days in the day she died last week. And a husband, and she has 3 sisters, 2 brothers, and a mum and dad.
Okay.
Now, the funeral, and I know there's a lockdown, and I understand that. The funeral, they're only allowed 10 people in the church. So, immediate family, there's 12.
Okay.
So, my mother and father aren't gone, they're old, and they opted they wouldn't go.
Okay.
But I just think that 10 people to be in a church at a time like this, for people. I understood in the beginning of the pandemic, right? But now we have B&Q open. I was on Tesco's day a week and a half ago, and it was 50% off. And in the far aisles, there must have been about 40 people, which would be a quarter of the size of the church.
And Susan, there's so many churches in Dublin built in the 50s and 60s under the tutelage of John Charles McQuay. They were often built before schools were built, before shops were built, before community halls were built, but that's not here nor there. But they're absolutely massive. Some of them can take up to 2,000 people. How many could fit at a guess? Was it in a small church?
No, it wasn't in a small church, and it actually doesn't matter what church it is, because it seems to be across the board.
Yeah, but I'm saying if the church is, like I say, if they're...
there's a 2-metre distance.
Yeah.
Like, loud. There's no church that's small, the 10 people fit in, unless maybe down the country.
No, there's no church that's small. Yeah, and even one person per row in some churches would give you 150 people, wouldn't it?
But I believe now the priest, they were told if there's more than 10 in the church, the priest will walk off the altar. Now, this has gone back to the day when Catholic Church ran the country. So they're running the churches, they're running the funeral. And people have no say.
And what I didn't realise as well until the weekend, you're not allowed to have stretch limos either. Did you know that? Because more than 4 people can fit into them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can get a taxi.
Yeah, yeah.
So 4 people can get in a taxi.
Now, you see, Susan, one of the arguments put forward about why funerals are restricted is because there are too many funerals because of this awful pandemic. And it's just...
not that many funerals if you look at the deaths now. I mean, what, the 10, 12 deaths now from the pandemic?
Well,
the pandemic.
Yeah, but
this woman is suffering years with sickness.
Yeah, but even the 4 that were announced yesterday who died is 4 too many. And to their family, they're 100% gone, and that's the tragedy. But what would you like to see change?
Sorry, can I just get back to you on the 4 deaths yesterday?
Yeah, yeah.
More than likely, then people went even with their loved ones when they died.
Yeah, we know that, yeah.
And then they have to go to a church and pick 10 closest friends and family that allow go into the service.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see the government, because there's now money to be made in churches, funeral parties are still making that money. So I'd like the government, where they didn't look at the nursing homes in the beginning, I'd like to look at the deaths, look at the funerals, look at what they can do by the families of these people that have died, to make it easier for them.
Mm-hmm.
A death in any way is very bad for someone to deal with. But can you imagine the mental health of some of these people that are going to funerals that will never forget this day?
That is the domino effect of COVID-19, which we'll probably never know the full extent of, Susan, between people not going to hospitals when they should have been going to hospital, non-COVID stuff, because they're afraid of the hospitals being overrun or indeed catching COVID. People who become depressed, fed up, lose their job. The list is endless of the domino effect, or even listening non-stop to the news is deeply, deeply distressing for people. And then hearing individual stories, like your own story, we're hearing individual stories about how people dying long before their time, people dying alone, In the UK, wasn't there a case of a young child who had COVID who died on his own? This has come up in light of the controversy over there with this man, Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's advisor. That they're horrific stories. So you're saying, how come the supermarkets are open? How come the supermarkets ran sales? We heard about that 2 weeks ago, the boutiques, and we did it 2 weeks ago. All the smaller shops really up in arms about the big supermarkets being allowed open and opening their homeware section and their clothing section. And whereas homeware shops and clothing shops weren't allowed open. Now, Heather Humphrey said at the briefing last Friday week, it come up on Liveline that day about homeware shops, and she said homeware shops shouldn't be open. I just wonder, are the Dunn Stores homeware shops sections open? Are the ones in Tesco, the homeware section in Tesco, and the clothes section in Tesco, or even the bedding section? Because Mattress Mick isn't open, yet that element of the supermarkets, from as far as we can find out, is. And Simon Harris, the Minister for Health, said getting a new bed is not an essential item. We're getting a pair of curtains, new curtains to dicky up the house, to use his phrase, is not an essential item. But there seems to be discrepancy. So you're saying, on the one hand, the supermarkets, there's lots of, well, we've seen the photographs, queues and crowds. And whereas funerals, which invariably, for a Catholic funeral anyway, in their big churches, they could relax it and let more people go.
Well, I think the Catholic Church, after the past, is in enough trouble in Ireland. I think they should be a bit more lenient and go and get the proper advice on what they can do to help people in these cases.
Now, even for them to hear stories like this, is very important. Okay, Susan, you mind yourself and stay well. Stay well. Thanks,
okay,
Susan.
Thank you.
Let me bring in. Thanks, Susan. 51551, wash your hands. Terry Patterson. Terry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, you got a leaflet yesterday from the HSE.
No, it was on Friday. I had a test. I had a COVID test down in Dunleary.
Good stuff.
And when they had done the poking up my nostrils and things at the car, they handed me a leaflet, a HSE leaflet.
Right.
And I was kind of amazed to see that on the front page of the leaflet, it says, although you've been asked to stay at home, keep yourself mobile. Then it says, keeping a distance of more than 1 meter, bracket, or 3 feet, bracket, from other people is recommended. And then on the next page, it says, if someone urgently needs to come to the house, keep at least a meter, bracket, 3 feet, away from them, and advise them that you are not well. Now, what strikes me is that there's a degree of mixed messaging here, because that 1 meter to 3 meter is so vital to so many people. I know somebody who's in the restaurant business, and there's a hell of a difference between four people sitting 1 meter apart and four people sitting 2 meters apart at a table. And
so the HSE leaflet said, if possible, stay at a distance of more than 1 meter. Yet we're told it should be two. We're told generally it should be 2 meters at least.
Well, I've been cocooning. So I only saw a store last Friday. It's amazing how many 2 meter signs are up and on the floor. And
they're everywhere. Yeah, they're
2 meter. Yeah. And then you get this saying 1 meter. It would make such a difference to so many people if it was 1 meter. So I'm just saying, does this mean that because it's a printed leaflet, that at some stage they have considered and accepted the World Health recommendations of 1 meter? And if that is the case, then they should really be telling people.
Well, part of an argument I heard earlier on was, well, it's a good idea to say 2 meters in Ireland, because that means it'll end up as 1 meter. Whereas you say 1 meter, it'll end up at half a meter.
Well, that's a bit Irish, Joe.
What prompted the test? Why did you have to go for a COVID? Can I ask your COVID test?
Yes, of course. I had to feel very ill on Thursday, and my wife has a lung disease, so I had a temperature, I had chills and pains, and so my doctor sent me for a test because he wanted to be sure that I hadn't. I wasn't infectious, because it would be much more serious for her than it would be for me.
Okay, fair play.
And we're cocooning together.
And you got the results fairly quickly.
Very good. 23 hours. 11 o'clock Brilliant. The next day, I had the results, which I must say, they were very efficient.
And I hope they were negative.
They were negative, yes.
Great. Well done. Okay, well spotted. There is a debate going on between 1 metre and 2 metres.
There is, yeah. And I'm just wondering, is that, are they just flying a kite?
What's your own wisdom on it, Terry?
I would believe that we will end up at 1 meter. Okay. And I just think that will happen. I just think that from the point of view of schools and crashes, and that the 2 meter thing is nearly unworkable, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Terry, stay well, you and your wife. Thanks indeed, Terry. Let me bring in Sean Alimi. Sean, good afternoon.
Hi, Ido. How are you?
Good. What's your campaign? Go ahead.
I'm a beauty salon owner, so I own a small salon in Clane in County Kildare.
Okay.
And I've just been, it's just been getting a little bit more frustrating for me each day. Obviously, it's come out, the Irish Hair Federation have come out with some brilliant guidelines for hairdressers to reopen sooner rather than later. And my kind of bone of contention really is that beauticians have gotten nothing. You know, we don't have any guidelines, we've no sets. You know, structure to open under. And although we are under the same industry, the hair and beauty industry, we have never been separated from them. They're two different occupations. We, you know, their guidelines may not be sufficient to our work, you know, doing nails, facial waxing. You know, we're very, very up close and personal with people every day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I have just felt that I've been talking to a lot of other salon owners also, and we just feel very kind of in the dark a little bit. You know, we haven't gotten any guidance, we've no guidelines, we don't know how to open. You know, even when the government had set out, you know, hairdressers can open at this date, we weren't mentioned there either. So we've kind of been put in the same bracket as the hairdressers, which as an industry we're the same, but as an occupation we're very, very different.
But have you been mentioned in the hairdressing directive? No, so you haven't been mentioned.
We haven't been mentioned at all. We've been mentioned, as in they have mentioned hair, beauty, spa, but we have gotten no guidelines. We've gotten no, you know.
So you're presuming it's the 20th of July for you.
Well, and this is the thing. Are you
pleading it should be earlier?
No, I'm not pleading for a date or anything like that. I'm just pleading for guidance as to how we can safely open for our clients, for ourselves. You know, I might, as of when we do open, I will only be able to have one client in my salon, which means I'm on my own. I employ one girl part-time one day a week, but I'll be working maybe 12-hour days because I can't do split shifts, obviously, because I'm on my own. Yeah. So to try and accommodate everyone and to do that safely, if one person comes in and, you know, something happens and I somehow contract it, and I continue working if I'm asymptomatic, because I'm young and I'm healthy. Mm. And then I do 12 people in a day. They go home to their family, and it's a knock-on, you know, because we don't have proper guidance. We're doing what we think is best, but not what is government directive.
And is there anything online from other countries about beauty salons?
There's been a few things. I know Greece has opened and they have kind of done, that's kind of what I've been looking at really, is other countries, and they have the protective screens up for nails.
Greece, compared to other countries of similar population and similar geography, have had an infinitesimal. They've had 147, I think, deaths, which is awful.
Yeah,
whereas Italy has had 36,000, the UK more now. So I'd love to know if there's anyone listening in Greece that would tell
so
us
would
why,
so would I.
Why Greece did so well.
Yeah, because Australia, I was talking to someone who works over there, and their hairdressers reopened, but their beauty salons and nail salons, as far as I know, stayed closed for an extra few weeks because of the close proximity.
You can do nails with social distancing, can't you?
No, like it's not 2 meters, and like we're holding people's hands. They're very close. A lot of clients like to talk to you and, you know, be up close, and you know, we're confident for a lot of our clients. You know, they like to
be
near us.
And then waxing and things like that, that's up close and personal as well, isn't it?
Very
personal.
But yeah, like it'll be, you know, all we can do, what I'm thinking is, you know, gloves, visors. I mean, we're very sanitary anyway, you know, it's very hygienic. But gloves, face masks, PPE equipment, which, you know, we apply for the grant for that, which is brilliant. But in terms of, you know, a set structure, we don't have any.
Okay, where's Barbara Glashinska from in Ballina? Barbara, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
How are you doing? You've a hair salon in Ballina.
Yes, I own a hair salon for the last 7 years, yes.
Okay, how are you getting on? You're closed, obviously, at the moment.
We are closed, yes, and we were originally put into a stage 5 reopening.
Yeah.
And we were pushed now to stage 4, and the Irish Hair Federation is pushing now for us to open even sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like a voice of a small to medium salons to be heard, that we all don't want to be rushed to get back to work, because mm-hmm. I feel the Federation is just shouting the loudest and return to work.
And are you a member of the Federation?
No, I'm not a member of the Federation. Okay. And I think they only are like a 10% of the whole community.
Yeah.
So I don't think their voice is the majority of what we think about the situation. I think it's too soon for the salons to be open.
Right.
And the Federation doesn't really mention the health aspect as much. And I think it's mainly money talk.
How are you surviving, Barbara, can I ask?
Well, my salon is small enough. My rent is affordable.
Okay.
I have a struggle as much as the bigger chains. I have to still pay all my bills.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think health is more important
okay.
in this situation. And we all love what we're doing, but I think health comes first. And it's not as if we're going to get back to a situation where we're not going to have work. Hair industry and beauty industry is one of those things. You can't do that online. Whenever we're going to get back to it, we're going to be busy. We're going to be very busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're going to be open at midnight, Barbara.
So I think there's no point rushing it. Only do it when it's safe.
But what about the other argument that there's a lot of women begging their hairdressers to look after them on the QT?
I do understand. There's nothing more than feel good about yourself, and when you look good, you feel good.
Yeah.
But I think the health is the most important thing.
Okay, agreed. Have you had any of your customers, your regulars, approach you to
yes.
slip in the back door?
Yes, no, well, I haven't been doing anything, but
I know, I got it, yeah.
Through social media, and anytime I go over to check my salon to get post or just check if everything's okay, people do ring and they think I'm open and can I take them, but no, I haven't been doing anything. I know there's people doing things on the side, but this is not good. I think we just have to be patient and wait until it's safe to do it.
Yeah.
And we've been told constantly that the virus is so dangerous.
Absolutely. Well, we're not told. It's been demonstrated to be virulent and dangerous and easily transmittable. Barbara, how many people do you have working with you?
So there's altogether 4 of us.
Okay.
3 other ladies plus me.
Mm-hmm.
We're all working part-time because we have families and kids and health problems as well. So I think we're talking to my staff. I have wonderful staff. They're all lovely girls. We're more friends than
mm-hmm.
we have a partnership relationship, but they all have kids and families, and from talking to them
mm-hmm.
We all want to get back to work.
Of course,
we will
yeah.
be going back to work, but only when it's safe. And I think with the Federation pushing, they just don't represent us small to medium sized businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That we have our own concerns as well, because we have families and other things.
Yeah.
And just even, if I can say one thing,
yeah.
last week I rang to my suppliers,
yeah.
and they're not ready. They're waiting for the stuff to come, like disposable towels. We're going to have to have everything nearly disposable, and that's not still in stock, so we're not ready yet. It will be mid-June. And one of my suppliers said it will be September before they're going to get the disposable stuff, because it's such a high demand.
Okay, okay. Barbara, do you think when you come back, would you have to increase your prices?
I wouldn't want to do it to my clients, but from the disinfection point and the stuff that would have to be disposable... Yes, like towels, they're washed, they're material, normal towels, everything. But I'm going to have to stop using them. It's going to have to be a paper disposable towel, one-time use only. Same with gowns, masks, aprons for the staff, everything. Everything is going to change. Plus, the amount of people that will be allowed in a certain surface of the place is going to be reduced. So let's say it was three of us working and each of us had, let's say, three clients at the same time. That's all going to be gone. We only be able to have maybe one or two clients.
So the likelihood is that your prices will have to increase.
Yeah, they will have to, unfortunately. But I know people will pay because they would want to have it done.
Yeah, yeah. Finally, Barbara, have any of your clients sent you in money and said, listen, this is for when you come back, but I'm conscious that you're not earning any money at the moment?
No.
It's good.
Offer, let's say, they will ask me, will I sell them a colour pre-mixed and they will apply it at home, which is very, very dangerous and I don't advise anybody.
And why is it dangerous, Barbara?
Well, we know how to apply colour, how long it has to be left on. We always watch the customer, is there any reaction happening? Or even if they get the same service done constantly, we have to watch over. Is it washed out properly? Because if they do it themselves, they might not wash it off properly and it can react if it's left too long.
Joseph Bell. Joseph, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Good. You are president of the Irish Hairdressers Federation.
No, I was the next president of the Irish Hairdressers
Federation. Okay, off you go. Your point, please, Joe.
So I heard a lady talking about hairdressers in the IHF talking to people and wanting to go back from a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
Hairdressers are certainly, I know for a lot of hairdressers, I know a lot of people in the industry are taking extreme measures to make sure that safety is number one issue in the salon.
Okay.
So people have got perspex screens, lines that hang down between stations. They've got PPE ready for clients. I'm organising, we're at Clontarf in Nolan Fair. I'm organising that all clients get disposable gowns, towels, gloves, masks, and that staff will be obviously have the right equipment. So I don't think you could be in a safer environment in relation to dealing with customers, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when do you want to be back in action? When do you want with confidence and safety to be back in action, Joe?
Well, I definitely think, Joe, that we can be back by the 29th of July. We're out since the 16th of March.
The 29th of June or the 29th of July?
Sorry, the 29th of June.
Yeah, okay.
28th of June, isn't it? Phase 3.
Yeah.
I think that salons are, by their nature, are sterile places and they're a very clean place to be in the first place. But it's just, I think also there's a huge demand for hairdressing. Clients are ringing the shop, trying to please come in, can we take, there's all sorts of stories going around about deposits and salons are people are offering €300 for haircuts and all sorts of stuff. So I think also from a business perspective, I'm a small business, you know, we're in a situation now where, we'll have deal with landlords in relation to rent that has to be paid, has to be put on hold, there's going to be bills. And also then from a point of view of people coming back with the restrictions, there are going to be less appointments done because we'll have to take longer times in between clients, make sure everything's cleaned down in between. So we're going to have to shuffle opening hours and maybe shifts for staff and work 7 days a week to try and catch up clients. Because clients are... You know, it is.
Joe, would you have to put up your prices?
Yeah, I think without a shadow of a doubt, we're going to have to put our prices up. Okay. Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. I think in the retail sector across the board, and certainly with restaurants and hospitality, if a place has, you know, if we can only do X amount of clients a day, and yet our overheads are staying the same, it's you can't sustain a business if costs don't go up. It will be, and if restaurants, if you have a 50-seater restaurant, it's down to 25.
Joe, Fintan Lynch is in Kinsale. Fintan, you're a hairdresser as well.
Hello, Joe. I've actually never rang Joe Duffy before in my life, but I with due respect to what the gentleman was before was saying, what I'm speaking is that as a hairdresser, And as a professional body, that we are we being represented fairly by the membership of the HFS or the AHF in ratios regarding the communication with the government and the industry? That would be my one concern.
Well, what is your view?
My view is that we should be opened on the directive of the HSE.
Which is the middle of August, isn't
which
it?
Which is the 20th of July.
The 20th, you sure?
20th of July is what they're saying to us, I think, on the first one.
Joseph Bell, what is... I'm trying to get the roadmap up here again.
The 20th of July, yeah. Okay. Initial phase opening. And what we want to do is try and work with proper communication so far that when we do open, that there is consideration to the revenue that we bring into the economy, that we have been aided with proper safety equipment, the proper thing that we have to avail, because for this to reflect the cost of what it is for us to close, we'll also have to reflect the consumer price of our product, so that the consumer again will have to pay for something. But with correct assistance and communication from the government bodies, we can get this thing worked out. You know, people aren't going to die from a haircut. But we could die from contact or whatever, or other people have got sick. Also, that our lives matter, and so do yours. And the mental health aspect in which we provide is vital, and that can be communicated through consultations.
Joe, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, look, Joe, the government are very vague in their directives from the thing. They give an outline, a briefing, that's very, very vague. There's a 19-page document you can read through as to what should happen and how we should provide. It's up really to the hairdressers themselves, to some degree, to get on board and create a safe environment for the clients and for the staff. I mean, it is absolutely imperative as an employer that the staff, our staff are being looked after and make sure that they're not going to be in trouble. But if the procedures are put in place, Joe, and we have dividers between clients, everyone's PPD'd up, we're reducing the numbers of people.
Okay, but you're basically saying you want to open 3 weeks before you're currently listed to open.
Yeah, I think, Joe...
Fenton, what do you think of that?
I am going with what's safe for both our clients and ourselves to open safely. And then that would be based on medical guidelines.
Okay, well, the guideline at the minute is the 20th of July. You're willing to stick by that?
That's what I feel, until the communication and direct communication that we're safe to open.
Okay. Let me bring in Cathy Shambino, and listening in Portugal. Cathy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you?
My heart is going out to all my friends and the ladies in Ireland who can't get their hair done or their waxing.
Well, can I get my hair nailed and can I get waxed in Portugal at the moment?
Yes, you can. You can, Joe. But
I'm on my way.
I'd add a word of caution because there's absolutely no doubt. It is, with all the goodwill in the world, wearing your mask, using the hand sanitizers, the salons being pristine clean, which they are here, there's a real concentration on, you know, keeping everything in the best disinfected and sanitary conditions that they can. But there's no doubt about it. It's impossible to keep a 1 metre or a 2 metre distance if you're having...
So salons in Portugal have reopened?
They have, 2 weeks ago, yes.
And are you working as we speak? Are you open today?
Yeah, I'm a customer now. I'm a client.
A customer? Okay.
I've been to a salon. I've had my hair done and manicure and pedicure. And what I'm saying is they opened 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
But remember, Joe, everybody has been wearing masks in Portugal since practically day one. So it's become part of the culture now. I mean, even this morning, you know, I had to go to the post office. I had my mask on. I had to go to Lidl. I had my mask on. You're automatically wearing your mask. So everyone in the salon is wearing the masks. There's less clients being dealt with because of the social distancing. There are certain treatments. You keep your mask on when you're getting your hair coloured, you know, which is a little bit awkward. But the therapists and the salon owners are working around that. And I think it's down to responsibility. I think if the clients themselves take a responsible attitude and the salon employees and owners take a responsible attitude, it can work. But you're not going to get the social distancing element if you're getting the more personal treatments done, like waxing.
And how do you know how they're organising that?
Well, they're wearing masks and gloves. Okay. And if you're getting a lot of girls here, they're mad about gel nails. So if they get the nails done, they have the visor, you know, they have their visors on as well. There's a lot of sanitizing. There's a lot of disinfecting, cleaning, buckets, mopping. You know, it's a real...
And have the prices gone up, Cathy?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yes,
and
there has been.
Insofar as how did Portugal manage to escape? I know people died horribly, but how did they, compared to Spain, the same landmass, the Iberian Peninsula, how did you manage? How do you think, did Portugal do that?
A couple of key decisions, Joe, were taken certainly in advance of Easter. In Portugal, we would have a lot of Portuguese who would live and work in France and Spain.
Okay.
And traditionally, they would come home to their families at Easter. It would be a huge family time.
Okay.
And Portugal, the government of Portugal with the government of Spain working hand in hand, closed the borders. And that was very hard for people who wanted to come home, I mean, and see, you know, and spend time with their families. So they closed the borders. So that stopped a big influx back in. They closed the airspace. The people in Portugal are quite compliant. We didn't have a lot of issues with following exactly what we were told to do by the government. A lot of people stayed home. A lot of people were very frightened. I mean, genuinely very frightened.
Okay.
And everybody started to wear their masks quite early on. And we're very similar to Ireland. We're very family oriented. So there was a huge community spirit in the same way as there has been, you know, coming out a lot of the reports in Ireland, trying to help older family members cocooning, trying to see if you had maybe elderly neighbours who might need their shopping done and going and doing it for them. All of the frontline workers, the same as Ireland, fantastic people. I see them when I go out for a walk in the morning, going around and helping.
And is the tourist industry, is the country reopened?
We're going in phases. For example, small shops of a certain footage that open out onto the street opened up on the 18th of May. There are certain stores that have opened, but the bigger stores, the big shopping centres, the big IKEAs, those types of stores, the bigger footage, they haven't been allowed to open. That's all happening on the 1st of June. And we've a bit of an issue here as well, Joe, about whether we're going to be allowed to use the air conditioning in the shopping centres, which is a real issue because it's up in the 30s from tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know...
And what about beaches and bars and hotels and restaurants?
They're making decisions about the beaches at the moment. I think they're trying to work out how they can keep some kind of social distancing. I know we have a beach near us called Nazaré, and they wanted to put a traffic light system up there, but the people just said no.
What do you mean a traffic light system?
Well, kind of, you know, if there was space on the beach, there'd be green for go.
Okay,
you might get to the beach and find that it's all full and it's red, and therefore you have to wait for your slot to get onto the beach.
I know what you mean.
And people felt that wouldn't work, so they're now looking at pegging out the areas and saying, right, this is an area where, you know, a family could sit, and then whatever number of metres away. And I don't know the exact number of metres because it's still being decided.
Well, I can tell you the beaches in Ireland, Cathy, are red at the minute, but it's not with the traffic lights because everyone's getting sunburned.
They're
flocking, even today.
I don't blame them. And I mean, the Algarve is working. They have a new initiative, and I think there's about 40,000 businesses have signed up to it for this clean and safe label. There'll be certain objectives that they have to achieve to enable them to have the clean and safe label. But I think there were only about 400 fatalities in the Algarve. So it seems to have, you know, it seems to be quite reasonably safe and clear at the moment.
Okay, Joe, did you want to, just to say, Cathy, Joe, who wanted to come back in there? Was it Fintan or Joe?
If I can come back in here.
Joe, yeah.
Sorry, Joe, I'm not advocating that we should be in any way, shape or form unsafe for anybody to come in. Do you know what I mean? But I just think that as a business, Joe, there's certain length of time. Businesses, if they don't open soon, will not be able to open because they're running costs up as we speak. And in terms of getting people back to work, it really is imperative, as I say, for the mental health of the clients, but also for the staff. Staff are fed up at this stage. And I cannot see how, if we're ready with the stuff that we provide for clients, that you could be in a safe... It'd be safer to be in a hair salon, Joe, than it would be walking around the supermarket. It would become a clinical. The unfortunate part about it will be that, you know, cups of teas and stuff, the hairdressing visit is going to become slightly more clinical on the basis that we have to, you know, look after everybody. And therefore, as I say, just holding us off till the 20th of July on the basis that we could do what we need to do sooner than then is all I'm saying. That there's no reason, if everything's in place, why we can't go back.
Okay.
When you say where everything is in place, it's not in place because there has been no real direct communication, as the beautician said earlier on, with bodies who aren't affiliated with the IHF or who are independent hairdressers on their own. That communication line has been dropped. I'm totally understanding where you're coming from, Joe, the hairdresser, not Joe, the presenter, about wanting to get back in. But we have to go back under safe ways. And Portugal has done this. But also, if you take into account, Portugal is also a country that brought in much more conservative laws towards heroin and drug taking and stuff like that. So these infrastructure, they had a complete military lockdown as well, which Ireland didn't have. Yeah, we're a social country. I understand that hairdressers are important in communication regarding mental health and stuff like that. I'm totally aware. I'm not dissing anybody's attitude or anything like that.
Okay.
At the end of the day, Joe, it's going to be up to the hairdressers, the individual salon owners, to provide safety for everyone in the salon. They can't wait for the government to do that. Everyone will have to step up to the place and provide PPE and everything for their own customers.
Okay, Joseph Bell, Fenton Lynch, and Cathy Shambino in Portugal. Thank you all. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Are graveyards being too strict? A number of people are asking, not in terms of burials, but in terms of visits, given the immense size of them, and a lot of them have fully fledged roads inside. Catherine Flynn has contacted us. Catherine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It's Dean's Grange, the one in South Dublin near Black Rock, that's upsetting
that's
you.
Correct.
What are the rules?
Well, you're allowed to walk in. There's only funerals allowed in at the moment in cars. But you're allowed, there's a small side gate open where you're allowed to walk in and see the graves, see your loved ones.
And did you drive in heretofore?
Pardon?
Is that the way you normally get into the graveyard, driving?
It would have been, My parents are buried there as well. But my sister passed away in January.
Oh, God. Okay.
She was a young woman.
Yeah.
And the last time I have seen her grave was the day she was buried.
Right.
And I put a rose on her coffin in the ground. Because I myself got sick very shortly afterwards.
I'm sorry to hear that.
She never married, so we were very much like twins.
Yeah.
Is the best way to describe it.
Okay.
I rang Dean's Grange to ask them, was there any way they would oblige me to be able to say my final farewell to my sister on my own? And I was told categorically no. I can't walk. I have 2 crushed vertebrae. And I can't walk that distance. It's up in St. Paul's, which is at the very, very top of Dean's Grange.
Yeah.
So I have had no way to say my final farewell to my sister, whom I adored. I adored her.
Obviously, yeah.
Yes,
and you feel the only way you can do that is at her graveside.
I think anybody who has lost a loved one needs to be near them some way. I have only seen a video of the grave through somebody else who has kindly done it for me. But I just, at this stage, I rang even on Friday to ask, is there any exceptions? I can get a letter from my doctor to say I need to be driven in to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And absolutely no way. Now, some of the other graveyards are open to the public with cars. So I don't know, Dean's Grange, as you know, Joe, it's a very big right. graveyard.
I'm just wondering, given your distress, Catherine, and the recent bereavement, very recent, you've endured, I just wonder, is there any, a lot of graveyards have little four-wheel drives that the gardeners use or whatever, the gravediggers use. Is there any way...
They never suggest,
okay.
And no.
Dean's Grange, I think it's run by South Dublin County Council, isn't it?
I actually don't know, Joe, I've been totally honest with you.
Glasnevin Trust, who run or Massey's indeed, who run some graveyard.
I just felt that the gentleman was very abrupt with me.
He's probably up to his eyes. Now, did he say to you, Catherine, well, Catherine, you were here at the funeral?
Thankfully, I got to the funeral. Yeah. Yes, I was okay at that time. But, Joe, when you have a bereavement, it was very sudden in the end.
Yeah.
I just fell apart. I just fell apart. It took me over 3 months just to even be able to talk about my sister. And now that I'm ready to see her, I can't see her.
Yeah.
I think it's when you've gone through something. Everybody in Ireland at the moment is going through so much grief, and we all need to see our loved ones. We all need to see them.
Okay, can I ask you, are you religious, Catherine?
I would be. I wouldn't be overly religious.
Yeah, I know. No,
but I have a strong faith, yes.
Okay, and were you born into the Catholic Church or another denomination?
I was born into the Catholic Church,
Because the next speaker is Monsignor John Bourne from the Midlands. And Monsignor Bourne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You hear the distress that people are going through.
Indeed, and my sympathies to Catherine, and indeed I think what Catherine has enunciated there, you know, is the experience of so many people at this time. I mean, there's no good time to be dealing with the death of a loved one.
Yeah.
But this is a particularly distressing and difficult time. And our hearts go out to many bereaved people at this time.
And are you doing many funerals? John?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in Portisha Parish, and we would traditionally have over 100 funerals a year. So, you know, we have a couple of funerals every week on average. And that average has been maintained throughout this time. And it's just such a difficult time for people. And I think the pain and grief in Catherine's voice there and in her experience, it's such a difficult time. And the restrictions around our traditional supports at the time of bereavement. I think in Ireland we have a particularly, you know, good, healthy, traditional way of dealing with death and the gathering of families and gathering of friends and exchanging of stories.
And what do you think of the 10 mourners rule in the church?
Look, I can understand maybe why it was brought in the beginning of this pandemic. We were all really, there were lots of fear and all of that. But it's a very arbitrary number. And, like, there probably isn't a huge amount of medical or scientific knowledge around the actual arbitrary figure of 10. And 10 in a church, you know, we have 3 churches in this parish, very small, medium, and a very large parish church.
Okay.
So 10 is a different prospect in each of those buildings, you know. So 10 in our parish church, which would normally seat 1,500 people, there is no difficulty about accommodating far more people who can keep social distance and respect all of the rules and regulations. And look at safety first. There's no doubt about it.
Do you think the number of mourners allowed inside the church should be increased?
Well, I think if we can safely do so, why not? I don't think anybody would want to compromise on safety, but equally I don't think anybody would want to arbitrarily dictate a certain number, which has been done, that's causing huge emotional distress. You know, I mean, traditionally in Ireland, like, we come from big families. I'm one of nine myself, but the funerals we're celebrating, like, people have siblings, maybe five, six, seven siblings, a wife or a husband, a widow or a widower, three or four children and grandchildren. And, like, who says to the brothers or sisters, no, sorry, you can't?
Who decides? Yeah, who decides?
You know, and who actually decides, you know? I mean, are you putting that onus on the widow or widower, which is very distressing?
Yeah,
to decide. Or you put on the priest who again...
What has been happening, Monsignor?
What has been happening is, working with our funeral directors and ourselves, like, we don't really have to explain to people. They know. Now, we had a funeral this morning, and there was quite a number of people in our car park who stood there for the duration of the funeral mass and listened to it on an outside speaker. And I think but then they observed social distancing naturally, and so sat in their cars. But I think that people are sensible, really, and I think they felt somewhat associated with the funeral. Now, but I would like it to be looked at again in terms of some churches can certainly accommodate a far greater number.
Absolutely,
than that.
But some of the churches, I didn't know from driving past, but some of the churches in the Church of the Assumption in Ballyfermot, it's as big as an aircraft hangar.
Yes. I mean,
2,000 people.
Yeah, and I mean, like we're really not. I wouldn't think we're actually thinking about opening it up to whoever wishes to come, as we had
just
of old.
Just increase the numbers. Okay.
We're not at that stage.
Okay, stay with us. I just want to bring Linda Marr in. Linda works with the Irish Daily Mail and wrote a powerful piece on Saturday. And the power was out of passion because of the death of. Unexpectedly, of her cousin, Frances. Linda, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. You want to state what propelled you so strongly to write that piece?
Yeah, I tell you, Joe, it was just, standing watching, one, my mom, really, terribly upset by the whole thing, not even being able to walk over and hug her, seeing her look across the road at her brother, who's just lost his daughter and his wife, and her not being able to do anything for him, then when our cousins start arriving, and just seeing them and just not being able to, and I understand that even if they let more people in the church, we still wouldn't be able to hug them, but that part of it was it was very, very difficult on the day, but just the finality of that, the door closing on the church, was very, it just kind of left everybody, you just felt on the outside of the whole thing, you're having to get into your car, and the church very well did the video, and you're sitting in your car and just watching something like that, something that I can't agree with the Monsignor anymore, but something that he said, it's so integral to Irish life.
But you say that the restrictions on funerals are cruel and unnecessary at this stage.
Well, I definitely think in the bigger churches, it should be dependent on how many people can fit in a church. I genuinely don't see why, if you've got one row, three or four rows sealed off, one row, three or four. And, some of those churches, as you say, the one in Ballyfermot, that could take definitely dozens of people, but could, probably take in the low hundreds. And, I just think not allowing people to do what they need to do in a time like that, and I understand if the death is COVID related, that obviously brings in a lot of different elements. But if it's not, I don't see how they can't just change the rules. Everything else is opening back up slowly.
So what would you? I'm just from what I'm hearing about church sizes, and Monsignor Bourne, you can come in on this as well if you wish, is that maybe you should say if the capacity of the church is 2,000. Well, then maybe, it's unusual. You could let 10% capacity in once they spread out.
Could give a percentage capacity, I think that would work really well, and it would just give people just that bit more support and, send some kind of starting of the coming to terms with it.
What
yes, I do think, Joe, that figure of 10% is a very reasonable one. I do think that we can cope with all the safety precautions that are necessary if we had that sort of a guideline. And I do hope that we move on this because, you know, the emotional pain and damage that's been done to a lot of people is maybe going to last for a long time as well. And if it's not essential to the, you know, if there is no danger to the safety element, I think we really should move on it sooner rather than later.
Okay. Linda Marr, thanks indeed. Monsignor John Bourne and Catherine Flynn. Catherine, I hope you get to see your dear, dear sister's resting place very, very soon. I really do.
Yeah, can I just say one last word there, Joe, please?
Yeah.
If the beaches, just, I don't know whether I said it to you already, but if the beaches and the parks are open, please let us go and mourn our bereaved, our families, please.
May she rest in peace. Catherine, that's Catherine talking about her sister, Mary Flynn, who died unexpectedly in January. 551, and as you know, I always say, wash your hands after that. 1850 715 815 and joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. Colm Russell. Colm, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
And it's your mother who died, Teresa.
Yes. And I suppose it's just a follow-up to the lady who rang in to say her young family couldn't get to the church, and they were very upset over that. We were in a similar situation last week. Our mum died, but everything is very surreal. But I think regarding the 2 metre rule, we should really stick to it because we need to save lives. And the medics are doing their very best for us, and they're risking their lives every day. So we really should stick to the rule and help them to save us.
Yeah. And there was 10 people in the church, was there?
There was actually less, Joe. There was 7.
Okay.
Yeah, there was 7, Joe. And there were a small amount in the graveyard also. Although some people came along, and because the grave is an old grave, our dad's grave, it was close to the graveside wall.
Oh, okay.
So they stood outside, distance,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
She was a hero, and she didn't deserve to pass on from COVID-related problems.
Yeah.
So that's really what I'm bringing in.
Stay with us for a sec, Colm. Phil Larkin. Yeah. Phil, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. I presume if more than 10 people go into the church, I presume the priest has to say, I can't proceed.
At the moment, that's the guidelines, and that's what all the funeral directors have been given by the government to say that number should be restricted to 10. And it is all about people's safety and for health concerns. And the point I was thinking about was, if those guidelines weren't adhered to and if somebody subsequently got sick, perhaps a priest or the funeral director could be open to litigation.
That's a good point.
Because they didn't follow the guidelines. And sadly, that's an element that's creeping into our society that hadn't been there before. So I'm sure they have to be careful and, you know, follow the guidelines so that they won't be at risk for litigation in the future.
Well, it looks like the guidelines, well, at least inside the churches, have been strictly adhered to. Though you see photographs, was there a funeral down in Cork recently where the guidelines on social distancing outside definitely were not being observed. But anyway,
That's people, you know, whether that's up to themselves whether they decide to follow the guidelines or not. And unfortunately, some people will just do whatever they want to anyway. But it is a very difficult time for families. And as the previous contributors have all said, the churches are quite large. They can accommodate more than 10 people and still do social distancing. And it's very much part of our culture that people pay their respects.
Well, are you in favour of asking the government to have another look at funerals?
Yeah. Okay. I know the government have a lot on their plate at the moment, and there's all sorts of pressing issues, but this is definitely something. With the easing of restrictions in different areas, this, I think, should be top priority, to ease the restrictions for people that they can go and pay their respect to their loved ones.
Okay. Phil Larkin, Colm Russell, again, condolences, Colm, on the passing of your, as you say, your hero, Teresa, your mother. Thanks indeed. Back after this, 1857 15815.